I wonder why we have so many sayings along the lines of "don't bite the hand that feeds you" and "no good gift goes unpunished," or even "try not to poison the well," as if a tendency of human nature is to undermine acts of generosity and things that are present for our benefit. And from a distance, that seems like a horrible and self-defeating habit in which to engage. But I know that I've done it. I can remember, for example, back in my 20s, when I received a year-end bonus, when my bosses decided to reward me for work I had done earlier that year to oversee the move of our offices and to make all the decisions needed on selection of furniture, carpets, color palettes, working spaces, all of that for the new space. And they recognized that it had been a stressful undertaking. So they gave me a generous $5,000 payment. But when they appeared in my office doorway with happy faces and announced the award and acknowledgement of the toll the project had taken on me, instead of saying, "thank you," out came, "you have no idea what I went through to make that happen." The endless criticisms and resistance. And I had to be your mouthpiece for all the unpopular decisions about office assignments. And even as the words came tumbling out of my mouth, I knew I was overreacting to the way that they had referred to the toll the project had taken, thinking it made me sound fragile and over-emotional. And so, in reaction, I very emotionally fought to make it abundantly clear that this situation had been untenable. And I did that instead of focus on the fact that they already knew it had been a difficult situation and wanted to thank and reward me for the work I had done. I can still remember their stunned faces as I uncorked the dissatisfaction and all the resentment that I had stored up for so long. I bit the hand that fed me. I punished the givers of a good gift. But fortunately, I may have stopped myself in time to avoid actually poisoning the well. And two of our readings today highlight this human tendency to complain in the face of generosity, though for different reasons. In Exodus, Israel is in its second month of release from enslavement. In their travels so far, they had encountered water that was undrinkable. They complained to Moses, and then God provided a way for the water to become healthy again. They were then led from that place to an area abundant with water and palm trees. And then, in today's story, they have just left that place to journey further into the wilderness when they begin to complain again. This time, as they look around them, they fear hunger, and they say that they wish they had been left to die as slaves in Egypt, where even if they were slaves, they had bread and meat for stew. Time and again in the wilderness, the people will struggle to see the gift of their freedom as a gift, focusing instead on places of uncertainty, even in the face of God's promises to provide. God secures their freedom, and throughout their time in the wilderness, God is trying to show people that being in relationship with the God who loves them is their best shot at using their freedom in a way that leads to fullness of life. And time and again, the people struggle with the freedom that comes with some measure of uncertainty. At times, they believe that enslavement would be a better choice than freedom. The Exodus narrative serves as Israel's central story of God's deliverance and loving commitment to the nation. It also names Israel's struggle to trust and follow God where God leads, even when they are being led to a place of great promise. But stories like these always function on more than one plane. And so it is not only a story about Israel and its deliverance from Egypt, but also about humanity's ambivalence about freedom and the lack of certainty that can accompany it. God insists upon human freedom, but we get frustrated when someone misuses their freedom and harms someone else. I do, regularly. And sometimes, in the midst of that frustration, we decide that it is God's fault and want God to actually embody some good old-fashioned Old Testament-style retribution. Why does God allow this or that, we complain? Why doesn't God act more like a puppet master in the sky? Freedom is a gift to be embraced, but we know it is also a responsibility, and it comes without some of the guardrails that a more controlling God would offer. Our freedom invites us to live from a place of trust in God's capacity to meet us in our places of need, not necessarily to insulate us from the experience of need and loss and fear. And freedom invites us to trust that God often provides something in those places of need that we did not know to look for, because God chooses to be generous, regardless of whether we sometimes bite the hand that feeds us. As the Israelites complain about the lack of food, God responds with a provision of quail at night and manna in the morning. And they are given the instruction to go out and gather enough for that day, to be okay with what is actually sufficient for the day ahead of them. This is another place of trust, that they do not need to hoard, but to take only what they need for that day, to receive the bread and the quail as gifts to be enjoyed, and to trust that the gifts will come again. This is a story about trusting the generosity God offers us and unlearning habits of taking more than we need. Now, in the parable of the laborers found in Matthew's gospel, Jesus says that the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who pays everyone the same wage, regardless of the number of hours worked. Here, the complaint against God's generosity is a bit different. The laborers who have worked a full day grumble because those who came later have been made equal to them. They don't want the others to receive what they have also received. And they had come to anticipate not only the promised payment, but something more as well, calculating an alternative daily wage based on what was given to the short-timers. And the landowner has no patience with their complaint. He responds to one of them, "Friend," and here we lose something in translation, because the Greek word that was used here is actually for a false friend or a parasitic hanger-on. So the tone is a little more like, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? And then again, am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me?" I don't think Jesus is saying that this is how a Christian will pay their employees. This is not an employment model. But he is making an intentionally provocative and uncomfortable argument that when it comes to how we exist in relationship to one another and with God, exceptionalism and exclusivity have no place. It is not our role to assess whether it is fair that God extends the same generosity of grace to another that we ourselves have been given and once welcomed as a gift. When we look at that gift and judge it as suddenly insufficient and unsatisfying because someone we once felt better than is now a recipient of that same gift, we become a false friend of Jesus. We step out of the shared circle of grace and choose to feel like an outsider. We poison the very well that was designed to quench our thirst. And this is why Jesus is so insistent, because it ends up costing us dearly when we reject grace on the basis that we would prefer a merit-based system. Humans tend to evaluate their own actions as more justified than the actions of others, something social scientists refer to as fundamental attribution error. An example of this is that when I see someone speeding on the highway, I attribute the reason as their selfishness and their belief that they are more important than other drivers. When I speed, I am aware of my obligation to be somewhere at a certain time, and I would not dream of calling that selfish or self-important. None of us has a really good gauge on our own behaviors. And when people insist on a God who extends welcome and grace on the basis of deserving actions, they usually do so with considerable blindness to their own habits and their impact on others. And to that, Jesus says, stop expecting extra merit badges, because it's getting in the way of experiencing greater wholeness and joy. It is a pointless way of exercising the freedom that I have given you. The complaint of Israel in the desert and the complaint of the laborers in the parable are similar in this respect, I think. In a way, they are both saying, I would prefer the hell I know to the heaven I don't fully comprehend, because the kingdom of heaven opens everything up, and I have not yet learned to love on those terms. But the God of the universe has proven willing and able time and again to walk us into the rhythms of that kind of love, that we may feel bewildered at how to practice life-transforming love. The very Spirit planted within us will journey with us, and it will become our life's work, something we practice here in this place with one another.